Welcome to IIFX Tech Talk, a podcast series. I am Dr. Lou Marciani, director and co-founder of the Innovation Institute for Fan Experience. Our Tech Talk podcast feature members of the IIFX Experience Consortium. The Experience Consortium is a worldwide industry tech ecosystem and think tank comprised of tech companies, many with global footprints, that are digitally transforming the world and the sports and entertainment industry. The consortium members are reimagining sports and entertainment in the digital age. Each podcast features companies and organizations who use technology to drive the following: increased revenues for the venues, buildings, sustained attendance growth, operational efficiencies, sustainability, and frictionless fan journey. The consortium goal is to help sports and entertainment industry create immersive, memory-making fan experiences. Today's Tech Talk features Databoy. Databoy is a developer of highly accurate gunshot detection and localization sensor network systems. So it's my pleasure to welcome Kathleen Griggs, the CEO of Databoy. Kathleen, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Lou. Thank you so much for hosting me at this event.
Well, let's get started. You know, I think the probably the most logical question is, tell everybody the history of Databoy.
Databoy, I like to say Databoy, but a lot of people use Databoy. It's tomato, tomato. Our history was it's a long one. We started out as a Department of Defense research contractor. We were formed with a small business technology transfer program in the early 2000s, mid-2000s. The program was to transition a technology that was developed by starting out with Vanderbilt University, early research, where we worked in a program called Network Embedded Sensor Technology. And the focus of that program was to demonstrate how a distributed sensor network can collaborate and fuse information together to resolve a particular result. And the demonstration of that was gunshot detection. And so it was actually an embedded software sensor network device that was being built. It just turned out that it worked really well for gunshot detection. And so when we saw that initial demonstration, this looked like something that should be brought forward, had a lot of potential value for the soldiers and the warfighters in that community. We got this contract to continue to develop that and continue to do applied research and eventually commercialization of that tech. And so we adopted that technology from Vanderbilt. That became part of Databoy's technology. Databoy continued to fund that research through this Department of Defense program that went on for many years. It was basically a decade's worth of research that was funded through DARPA mainly, and also some funding from the Army and Navy. That's where the Databoy name came from. It's a Navy name. It means a so. So right. So this came all from our Department of Defense background.
That's very interesting. Well, why don't we give the folks right now, start off with a quick overview of the basic operations of ShotPoint. You know, let's start there.
Sure. I actually have a prop I can kind of demonstrate. If you can see this, this is one of our indoor sensors. Whoops, it's hard to see. Okay, it's... All right, this is getting tough.
Yes,
you can see there's these four black dots. Those are actually microphones. We have four channels that focus on a particular direction. The four channels, if an acoustic signature comes by our sensors, that will give you an angle of arrival, right? And so so each sensor can tell you, there are basically four independent gunshot detectors. So each one of those looks for a gunshot signature. If these microphones all report gunshot signatures, they will also report, you know, a lot of information about the direction of arrival of that sound, we use a patented multi-sensor fusion approach. So the next step from the detection is to go into a fusion processor. So we'll take detections and arrival information from multiple sensors, we'll fuse that together. And if that turns out that that complete result looks like a gunshot to our system, now we're going to report that gunshot. And that's how it operates. We first detect, then we locate the source, then we determine, the fusion process determines if that makes sense, that this detection from this source matches what a gunshot signature would be from that source. And if it's true, if it matches everything, then we're going to call that a gunshot. That's how it works. It's a two-step process.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are some of the distinctive differences, let's say, with data buoy versus competition?
There's two types of competitors in the space. There are competitors. There's a major competitor that works outdoors in cities, large area, wide area, gunshot detection. That ShotSpotter, a lot of people know about that system. That was also actually an early DARPA program back in the 90s. Originally came from DARPA. But indoors, most of the competition indoors, or in fact, all of them are, they're focused on the getting the answer from a single detector. So they focus a lot on the detection. They have a single device, right, that's going to look at either the acoustic signature, or maybe they have ways to determine signature information from muzzle blast, the optical signature. They'll use a combination of those. And that single detector is going to determine whether that's a gunshot. They're not doing what we're doing, which is looking at a complete multi-sensor fusion approach to determine and that's where we really differ. And that difference, we believe, is a real difference in the ability to filter out false detections from true detections on the indoors. And on the outdoor systems, we differ in a different way. They do some localization with the ShotSpotter system, but it's pretty wide area. And their sensors are very far apart. And so in the outdoors, our system is actually, our sensors are placed a little closer together. We get better information. That actually helps our detection, is to have better information. So with the closer sensors. And so we, again, kind of win because we have a lot more accurate information that helps us filter out those false alarms. So so I would say we are, we're superior indoors and outdoors. There's no other way to say it, but that is it's the approach that really works. And it just happens to be the sweet spot for what we do.
I'm thinking now in terms of a venue operator needing information right away. You say we can locate the sniper shooter quite quickly and his location, et cetera. Is that true?
So you brought up another feature of our system, but first I'm going to answer the question about timing. Okay. Our system is 100% automated. And that means that, the sensors detect, they send that information out, speed of light, that information gets to the users immediately in time to act, obviously. So we're going to push that message out in less than 2 seconds. And it's completely hands-off. We're that confident in our ability to determine gunshots, filter out false alarms, that we do not need a human reviewer. And what that does is it saves valuable time, right? You need to get that information instantly to save lives, right? That's what we're trying to do. On the second part of what you mentioned, is the fact that we can actually locate a sniper. It might be an elevated shooter. And again, that requires a sensor networking approach, because our sensors, this truly really only works outside right now. But if there's a shooter that might be in, a garage or maybe a hotel, think of Mandalay Bay, shooting down into a crowd, we're going to be able to detect the signature off of that rifle bullet, because that rifle bullet is supersonic. So we need multiple sensors to actually resolve the trajectory of that bullet. When we get that, that's why the multi-sensor fusion is a natural, right? And this is something that has been worked on for many years, actually back in the DARPA days, when we did a lot of research supporting warfighters, in squad environments, trying to determine where the sniper shot was coming from. That just works with, but you need a multi-sensor fusion approach in order to do that. But we can resolve that trajectory. We can locate the shooter with that information. And I also want to mention that if there's nothing scarier than having an elevated shooter, you cannot hide from an elevated shooter in that sense. It's the run, hide, fight. If you can see who the shooter is, if you can look at them, you know where they are. But if you don't know where that shot is coming from, that's the worst case scenario. The run, hide, fight doesn't work in that case. You have to figure out where that shooter is and get that information out to the crowd instantly so that they can do the right thing, so that they're running in the right direction. This is a critical technology. I think we feel like we're bringing to helping people stay safe.
How would the Las Vegas incident be different now that we knew what happened, and then with your capabilities, what would have been the difference?
Timing, of course, right? Because if you had that information, then you could go directly into acting. And let's say, for instance, in that Mandalay Bay hotel, there were police that could be that law enforcement could have acted if they had gone directly to that location within probably less than 2 minutes. And in that case, first, there's that information. And number two, if there was a way that with this communication could have gone to the fans who were watching, who were at that concert, didn't know which way to go. That's another piece of information, right? Just giving them the information as to what's happening. And maybe some direction, but let's just say in that case, no one knew where the shooter was. No one knew where the shots were coming from, which means that every piece of information that is going to the police at that time is no one knows what the right information is. Right. In hindsight, you could point to the fact that, well, this person was actually there. This person might've had the information. That's hindsight. They didn't have that in the event. And so what happened is that shooter expired before the police were able to actually respond. And so that is that's a tragedy that shouldn't happen, because that shooter would have been mitigated had they had the right response.
And that led to some other projects I know you have in Las Vegas, the Fremont Street. You want to tell the folks a little bit about what you're doing there?
The Fremont Street is, that is a very, very real environment. I want to go back to some of the ways that we differentiate our system from other systems today. To date, I believe we are the only indoor system that has seen live fire because we also happen to be outdoors. We're outdoors, not just in an entertainment location like Fremont. We've been operating for years outdoors in housing projects and areas where there's a lot of gunfire and gun violence. And because of that, we have a close connection to how the police use our system and how they respond. And I also want to go back to my days working with DARPA, working with SOCOM, working with soldiers, right? Soldiers, they don't have time for cognitive thinking. You need to give them the information they need. And so that is, there's a lot of work that actually went behind what looks like a very simple interface, something that's very intuitive. Right. And so so in Fremont Street, that was tested. Right. We had first of all, it's a very difficult and noisy environment. We have streets running through it. We have stage concerts. We have pyrotechnics on stage. There's just a constant barrage of different types of noise that has to be filtered out. So we do that successfully. And we've actually had real shootings. And in the case of the real shootings, what I feel most proud about is the fact that 3:30 in the morning, there's security personnel, Fremont Street security, no training on the system, because you can't keep up with training when you have a turnover rate, right? Once a month, 3 a.m, they got the message and they knew exactly what to do. And they were there in 30 seconds, right? From the moment they got that message. So that's kind of what I'm really proud about, is that they were able to act. But I'd like to add a little more to that, Lou, if it's okay.
Absolutely. If I keep going. Go ahead.
So in Fremont Street, it's very well lit. They have a lot of cameras. And so our integration with the video works very well there. And so when we integrate with video, we believe that it's important to get that image from the exact moment of the shot. So we have, we pull the frame from the timestamp of the shot. That goes out instantly to everyone so they can actually see that camera view of where that shooter is from the second. Typically, you can see them raising their weapon. So you can clearly identify who that shooter is. But we also locate them. Our location, I didn't mention this before, our location accuracy is better than 2 meters. So if you look into that camera image and you look to that exact location, it will actually correspond. You will be able to see that shooter, identify them, know who you're looking for. And we have a small message we send 3 seconds before, 3 seconds after video. So you can see a couple seconds before and after. Plus, we also add the before and after audio clip. That all gets loaded to that, and it, every user gets to see it. And we have 150 subscribers, meaning all the casino security managers, Las Vegas Metro is on there. Everyone gets this message all at once. And we also have the capability so they can set up an instant chat with each other. So they are updating immediately. Whoever's on the scene is updating that group immediately. So it works in that moment. And it's really specifically for that emergency, right? When that life safety emergency happens, everyone gets that and everyone's acting. So it all really works.
What's Kathleen, the role of the local agencies? You've worked with a lot of police departments, emergency management groups. What's the key here for their understanding of what you're doing?
That's a great point, because that, as I mentioned before, I think some of the things we're most proud of is not just that we have the information, but it's how we deliver the information, right, and how we've been able to get it right in terms of that user being able to use that information immediately. And and it hasn't been without input from our users, right? We've had our users, sometimes are our best designers. They will say, why did you make that icon like this? I can't push on it. You know, we've been through years of training with dispatch centers and also with police. And so we know that they're able to use that that information and go directly to the scene. But I want to say that this is having that audio confirmation. That's critical. Everyone wants to hear that. You know, even though the system says it's a shot, they like to hear it themselves. They get that. It takes them 3 seconds. They listen. They know that that's a shot. They can see the shooter in the picture. They know exactly who they're looking for. And we have probable cause now, right? It's not, there are other systems out there that will indicate that they think there was a shot. But without this information in their hand, when they go to the scene, they don't necessarily have probable cause to go after any particular individual. What this provides them is that probable cause. And frankly, we've actually heard from our users, from the police department, that what we put together in that nice little package is the evidence that they typically spend hours to days collecting afterwards. And we've been well received because of that, because we've actually made their jobs a lot easier in collecting that evidence.
In talking with our colleagues, I think you moved the needle, because the perception of the average operator is that this is detection only. And I think what you're doing and moving it to the point where it's reactive and quick communications to react and do something about it from the standpoint of the law enforcement, that is significant.
It is. And I also want to say that a lot of folks will ask, well, how does this report to 911? And we say, well, it doesn't really, because 911 is an intake system, right? 911 gathers information. The 911 operators will create an intel, and then they will actually put it into a dispatch. So there's a cycle there. That process takes time, right? We're actually a parallel operation. We go right into a piece of intelligence that they can act on right away. And so the police that we worked with recognize that. Yeah. And so they use this in parallel with their 911 system, and it goes right into a command or a watch. You know, there are single pane of glass systems that are basically dispatch tools that our system will connect into. So that's... the other time savings is we have, if you want to read about it, we have some case studies out there. One in particular validated that our system is reporting anywhere from 30 seconds to 3 minutes ahead of any 911 call. So that's even where the clock starts. So if we're 3 minutes ahead of a 911 call and it takes them 3 to 5 minutes to process that information to dispatch properly, that's minutes that we're saving. That's lives that we're saving, right? And so that's the key, is to get that action faster to those, to the people that need it, yeah, to the victims and to catching that shooter.
Well, it's all about making the smart decisions. And this is what you really accomplished. If you want to get down to it, better decision making than ever before when it comes to a horrific incident as such as an active shooter. So now I know with us in the consortium, as you being a strong member of it, we're going to undertake a major project in Detroit with the Ehlich Holdings family. Tell the folks what you want to accomplish there. Why is it important to you, et cetera?
So I think that, this is not the same system that we're deploying, that we've deployed in the past. This is a system that I hope is going to be integrated into their, basically into their security response profile. And we're hoping to learn new things about this, because time is the key. And when you have a crowd like that, we need to be very well integrated so that the instant response, the response that we have now, which is calling 911 and getting out there, or not calling, I'm sorry, getting to the responders, getting out there, we think it needs to go a little bit further. So I'm excited because we have a very forward-looking, progressive security manager with Ehlich Holdings. And so we're truly excited to work with him, because I know that he's going to be doing more things and integrating with information systems, particularly if a shooter might be in one area, right? Integrating it with things that the fans could use to get the information they need so that they know where to go, what to do, they're informed. And we can also do things such as automating, we've done this before, targeting access control, automating PA systems. So I'm really excited about the things that can be automated based on our messages. And so this is the kind of location that I know we're going to be learning a lot, and we're going to be doing a lot of good integration.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And I love the way you're moving research from A to B and automated so that A, better response, quicker response, and better information. And this is the beauty of the work you're doing for us. You know, where are the Innovation Institute for the fan experience? How do you impact fan experience, do you think?
I think the just having that, knowing that that instant response is there, knowing that we're cutting through any information fog, right? Knowing that if an event is happening, the fastest possible response is also going to be happening. Knowing that mitigation is in place, and there's also going to be information as to helping the fans keep themselves safe and know what to do. Things like, you want to avoid a stampede, right? You want to avoid a panic. You want people to be able to respond in a way that's going to keep them safe, save as many lives as possible. If there is a horrific event, we're going to be saving those lives as soon as possible. Those are all things that have to happen, and they have to happen instantly in the moment, or they won't work, right? But I'm going to give an example. You might remember this happening in like a couple of years ago, 2021, in the Nats Park here in DC. So there was a shooter outside. Someone shot three people, but in the street outside of the stadium. Inside the stadium, it sounded like this, because of the echoes, it sounded like the shot might have been coming from inside the stadium. And it was a very dramatic event. I think I remember there were baseball players that ran to get their families. They hid some for hours, didn't know where that shooter was, didn't know whether the shooter was still there. And the real fact is that our system being outside and inside, well, we would know this in 2 seconds. In 4 seconds, that system would have been managed, right? That event would have been managed. The police would have been responded to the right location. The fans inside the stadium would have known what was happening and that they were safe. And so there were otherwise they were living in terror for a couple of hours. And so that is something that would certainly affect the fan experience if something were to happen outside the stadium, to know that they're safe, right? Number one. And so I think there's a lot of things that could, we also talked about the fact that, or I think at some point, you know, the false alarm, the stampede because someone is afraid that there's a shooter when maybe there isn't one at all. We also have the capability to determine if there is a loud sound. We have those reports that we would also be pushing to the security team. They would see what was happening instantly. They would get an alert saying this loud sound is happening. It's not a gun. But that information can be pushed out to fans to avoid a panic. And because a lot of folks are panicked whenever they hear something, they don't know if it's a shot. And that's information that we can pass on to the fans. And so I think there's a lot of ways we can make them more comfortable, make them as safe as possible in the event that everybody fears the most. And you know, there's a lot we can do to keep them safe.
You know, the other thing we hear a lot at the Institute is people struggling how to buy technology in for their facilities. What advice would you give to maybe the venue security director? I don't know what kind of relationship they may have with the local agencies. We don't know that. But if you were to give advice to Stadium X security director in looking and pursuing the best system for shot protection, what would you suggest?
So that's a very good question. And I'm not going to give you a fast answer to this. First of all, you want to think about a system that is, you know, will this system save lives? Right? Yeah. That's number one. If I'm going to put a system in, will it save lives if I used it? Number right? One. And so I think our system has proven that, right? That in the actual shooting events that we've been, you know, detecting and reporting, by getting there within 30 seconds, they're able to arrest a shooter, get that shooter off the street immediately. That saves future lives. But also there have been actual shooting events where we've been able to locate the victim so quickly they could get the shock trauma, whereas otherwise it might have been, you know, minutes to hours to. And we all know the story about the golden hour. You need to get that victim if you're going to save a life. That response needs to be precise. It needs to be fast. You need to. So in that sense, yes, we have been proven to be a lifesaver. That's number one. So yes, it would benefit you in that circumstance. Number two, what's the cost of ownership, right? Is this going to drive your security team crazy responding to false alarms, right? And are they going to ignore it? And so I think in our case, we've also been proven not to be a nuisance. We have such a low false alarm rate, as in, you know, Fremont Street, we're basically an indoors. We've never had a false alarm indoors. So that's, you know, that's something else too. When this system goes off, you know, it's real. And so by not actually causing the security team to do extra work that they, you know, that they don't need to be spending their time on responding to nuisance alarms, we actually are savings there. So if they want to look at a system, I would definitely really look into any claims about false alarm rates. That's because that's huge. If you have anything other than more than zero, it's going to be costing you, because you're going to be responding and your responders are just going to ignore the system. Yeah. And then it won't do its job. So those are things that I would think about.
Well, thank you for that advice. As people listening on this podcast, how can we make contact with you? We're interested in what you're doing. What's the best way to reach you?
I would definitely go to our website and DataBuoy. I have to spell this because it turns out I named the company DataBuoy and a lot of people can't spell buoy. So I'm going to spell this out.
They leave the U out. Go ahead.
It's the U before the O. Yeah. People flip that around. So it's DataBuoy.com. And now everyone's, I would say 50% of the population just learned something.
Including me, too.
So that's the best way to get a hold of us. Our contact information is right there on the website. You can read more about us, and we hope you do.
Yeah. Well, listen, all of us at the Institute want to thank you, Kathleen, for your hard work, number one, because we've gotten to work with you very closely and your research capabilities and making our lives safer. And I mean, that's what it's all about, is saving lives. You mentioned that very vividly throughout the whole podcast. And again, thank you so much for being on the podcast with us.
Thank you, Lou. Thank you so much for having me. Anytime.
Thank you.